এদিন শুক্রবার নে তো মানুষ মেরেটেরি কইলে না এই কইলে মানুষ বেগুন বেড়ানি ধরে ধরে মুরার কে কইলে নে তো বেড়িয়ানি বলা না তো বেড়িয়ানি বেগুন ফুরা গার ফুরা দিয়ে ফেলা দিব না এর খা ফুরা গার তালাম মারে বেগুন বই দেখে না কিন্তু তাই না বেড়িয়ান ধরে তারে সুন্দর লাগে তারে তো মেরে দিয়ে ধরে জুলুঙ্গার দিয়ে জুলুঙ্গার এর সব হাত ধুয়া আমার তেড়া এর গম গিয়ে
Rape is used in my country as a weapon against those who only want to live in peace, who only want to assert their basic human rights. Especially in the areas of the ethnic nationalities, rape is rife. It is used as a weapon.
Welcome to The Dean Show. How you doing? My next guest, CJ Wheelerman. Most of you haven't heard the Rohingya. I didn't know much about them. I mean, some things just don't make the news. You know, you got the signs when some fanatic, some crazy evil person goes and blows up something. And next thing you know, the whole world, if the person have a certain passport, looks a certain way, has a certain color, it seems like that gets more news. Why is that? The whole world comes together. Stand for Paris. Stand for this. Stand for that. And we should stand together as humanity against the evil that's perpetrated by some evil fanatics. But we got to keep it fair and balanced, people. What about the Rohingya, United Nations, and all of the humanitarian, the human rights organizations have labeled this, what's going on to these people. This is a modern-day genocide. Women, where are all the feminists? Everyone, if you didn't know, you're not going to have no excuse after the show. They're being raped, and little kids and are being drowned, and men are being, and innocent people are being tortured, and it's madness. It's hell on earth. So you can continue to stay ignorant, but after this, you're not going to have an excuse. We can do our small part to create awareness, and I'm going to be helping to create this awareness with my next guest, CJ Wheelerman, on The Dean Show, investigative journalist, columnist, and someone who's made also a turn for the better, someone who also used to be full of hate, call himself somewhat of a bigoted hate racist, but he made a change for the better. There's hope for everybody, and this is what touched my heart, to have someone like him speaking up on behalf of this persecuted people. So this is an exciting episode. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Dean Show. I got CJ Wheelerman. How are you, my friend?
Good, man. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for finding the time to be with us. You're a columnist for the Middle East Eye, investigative journalist. The United Nations, the major human rights organizations, have said that this is the most persecuted minority group in the world. But the question is, where is the world? It seems like the international community, you know, when you, most of us, myself also, and I'm guilty of it, we don't, I mean, you got to kind of like go on your own investigating people like yourself who are brave enough to talk about this. But why is it that the global world is a community? Other tragic events happen and people are out there. And, you know, it's sad anytime something like this happens where an innocent group of people or a person is harmed and the whole world comes together and pray for Paris, pray for this group. But what about the Rohingya?
Yeah, I mean, to put it crudely or bluntly, I mean, brown lives don't matter and Muslim lives don't seem to matter either to the Western-led international community. We've seen this time and time again from Bosnia. For instance, Western intelligence agencies had about 6 weeks warning on what was going to happen in Srebrenica. We had 8,000 Muslims killed. It wasn't until years later that Clinton decided to intervene there. We've seen this in Syria. Obama, when he drew a red line in the sand, another 500,000 Syrians have been killed since. So when Muslim lives are on the line, Even though a lot of these, you know, most members of the international community have signed on to the UN principle of right to protect, which means if a sovereign state is unwilling or unable or is the threat or the number one security risk to humans within their or citizens within their state, well, the international community has an obligation to intervene and to protect those lives. But seemingly, when it's brown or Western lives, and you know, whether that's Rwanda, Rwanda or elsewhere, the Western community just sits on its, on the international community just sits on its hand. Even more sinister is the fact that not only is the Western-led international community sitting on its hands when it comes to the genocide that's taking place in Myanmar, as they're actively, proactively mobilizing and backing and supporting the genocide there. You've got China, which has said it fully backs Myanmar. You've got India, which says it backs Myanmar's counterterrorism operations in that country when there is no terrorist activity taking place in that country. That's, again, it's just a fig leaf for India to back the genocide against the Muslims, the 1.3 million Muslims taking, who live there. And Israel continues to sell weapons to China, and neighboring Muslim-majority states have said they don't have the finances or the resources to take care of the refugee problem there. So, you know, it's not a case of doing nothing. The Western-led community, international community, is doing something. They're actually helping this genocide take place.
Tell me, CJ, let's back it up. For the layman, the person who is hearing about this for the first time, can you break it down for us? What is the part of the world this is where this is happening, and what's happening? How did this all start?
Yeah, I mean, it started. I mean, Burma, as it was called, was a British colonial project, and the British there several hundred years ago brought in Bengali laborers from what is now Bangladesh, and they used them for, you know, basically civilian infrastructure projects. Cheap international foreign labor, basically. And so what is now 1.3 million Rohingya Muslim population is there now, I think, in the diaspora. I think the population is closer to about 4 or 5 million. They're basically a stateless people because Bangladesh no longer considers them to be Bangladeshis, and Burmese don't consider them to be part of the Burmese culture. And so they've always been scapegoated and vilified. There's basically four decades of solid evidence of periodic mass killings, torture, and expulsions. Whenever political opportunists within the military junta have needed somebody to vilify to, you know, help justify their brutal and oppressive regime, well, they've blamed the Rohingya for it. So they've been the perfect political scapegoat for a time immemorial.
So this is the Rohingya people, and this is in the country. It's right next to what, China and India, is that right?
That's right.
Myanmar?
Yes.
And this is now a people that have been there for hundreds of years?
Yes, that's right.
And they've been persecuted for these hundreds of years, and now is this something that's just coming to light, or it's gotten to a whole nother level?
It's gotten to a whole nother level since about 2012. So, you know, Myanmar is in a transition period from transitioning from being a military junta to basically a quasi-democratic state. I mean, you know, it's a bit of a joke that it is democracy. I mean, Aung San Suu Kyi is basically just a puppet figurehead to give the military junta a friendly democratic face. She's effectively powerless, but that doesn't vindicate her from the genocide that's taking place in Myanmar, because she's used rhetoric, the same kind of rhetoric we've seen Assad use to demonize Syrian opposition as jihadists or terrorists or Islamic extremists, when the Rohingya are far from that, when the Syrian people were far from that. And so she's complicit in the genocide. Even though she might be powerless, she's certainly complicit and has added fuel to the fire with what's happening there. So so the crackdown really began in about 2012, during this transition period. And they've really stepped up, the Myanmar military has really stepped up its operations to dispossess, to kill, to torture, to loot, and to, you know, expel the Rohingya population. I think now 300,000 are now internally displaced and are seeking refuge on the Bangladesh border. I think there's something like 80,000 who have now successfully crossed the border illegally into Bangladesh or in one of the three main refugee camps there. But the great majority are trapped there on the border, basically at the whims of the Myanmar's military.
So these are people that their ancestors were on this land. They were born on the land. So now there's specific rights that have been taken away. They're not allowed, correct me if I'm ever wrong, they're not allowed to vote. They're restricted now to internment camps. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to have more than two children, something like that.
They basically live in segregated apartheid living conditions at the best of times. Now these are the worst of times where apartheid and segregation almost sound quaint compared to what's happening today. This is a full-on ethnic cleansing project, and even the United Nations issued a statement 2 days ago saying this meets the textbook definition of ethnic cleansing.
I really commend you, because sometimes people, like, they jump on, it's a trend. It's kind of like trendy when, there is something going on in the world and, celebrities, everybody will jump in and they'll bring light and they'll help to mitigate, a certain tragic situation, bring light to it, and then the media will jump on, and now, people will have to account. But you're one of the few. I really commend you. You're doing some great work creating awareness on this. Why don't we see more? Is it just people are ignorant about it?
I think it might be a combination of ignorance. I mean, it's also, too, the Western mainstream media is a selective outrage generating machine. And, the lives and plight of brown people, particularly Muslims in a part of the world where most Americans or many people in the West can't identify on a map, doesn't really stir a lot of media headlines in the Western media, I mean, if it wasn't for social media, many more wouldn't know what's taking place there. I will say I have seen a little bit of which is encouraging. What started off maybe with Middle East Eye and Al Jazeera and those type of outlets, which sort of cover the plight or the crisis of Muslims around the world. I mean, I even saw CNN cover the story for the first time maybe a couple of days ago. So noise is being created. I think enough people are paying attention now for there to be. Headlines to be common, and once you have headlines, then you have a debate and discussion, and from that, policy follows. So hopefully policymakers, there's enough pressure on them, or growing pressure, that they're unable to sit on their hands and ignore what's happening.
Let's talk about the tragedy of so many, I'm hearing so many innocent women are being raped, systematically by the army. Houses are being, whole villages, like 500, 1,000 at a time. Is this correct?
I'm not sure about those numbers, but I know the UN did an investigation several months ago and found that basically half, up to about 50% of all Rohingya Muslim women had been subject to some sort of sexual harassment or rape. I think one in three verifiably raped. Children who have been bayoneted while they're breastfeeding from their mothers. Some of the atrocities that are coming out of there, match and are equal to anything that the Islamic State has ever carried out in either Iraq or Syria. But because it's Buddhist extremists who are carrying out these acts of terrorism, if this was some sort of Islamic, like Boko Haram or the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda operating and carrying out this genocide in Myanmar, and Myanmar was a Muslim majority country, and the Buddhists were being persecuted, you'd be pretty sure these atrocities would be not only getting more media attention, but we'd probably have U.S. drones flying over Myanmar now. We'd have special operations forces being dropped in the country, hunting down their leaders.
Talk about there's an extremist monk, and we don't obviously blame the Buddhism for these extremists, but do we see as Muslims, I mean, Muslims have become nowadays professional condemners. You know, we're always, you know, things that have nothing to do with Islam or the Muslims in America, some fringe element, they go and do something, you know, evil, and everyone is expected to condemn. We don't expect, you know, the whole Buddhist world to come out and condemn this. But do you see some prominent, like the Dalai Lama and others, coming out, and what's their stance on this?
Yeah, I mean, the Dalai Lama issued a statement several days ago saying that Buddha would be horrified with the actions of the Myanmar military and horrified by the rhetoric used by Wadratu, who's the Buddhist extremist monk who heads the 969 movement in that country, which is basically, you know, that's he's self-described himself as Burma's Bin Laden. So, I mean, he takes his cues and his inspiration from genocidal mass murderers. So, you know, again, I mean, we do see the double standard hypocrisy when it comes to, you know, Muslims versus non-Muslims, you know, Muslim extremists versus non-Muslim extremists. Nobody is coming out and asking the entire Buddhist community to condemn the rhetoric and the actions of either him or his followers or militias who take their inspiration from him in that country. But, you know, when an extremist, deranged Muslim who's adopted the perverted ideology of ISIS carries out an extremist attack somewhere on the streets of a Western European city, suddenly we expect 1.6 billion Muslims to condemn his actions. But when a Christian does similar or a Buddhist does similar, you know, that expectation or obligation, forced obligation, isn't there.
We see the power. You strike a great example, and you know, I'm from my parents. I came over about 40 years ago from the former Yugoslavia, Bosnia. The war that happened there and the struggle that was going on there, you know, against also something that many people are ignorant to, was one of the greatest genocides, if not the greatest genocide after World War II. And you have Slobodan Milosevic, the war criminal, who was using this hate speech and pumping up people, and then we see the evil effects of that. And we see the same thing what's happening here. You see these people in prominent positions pumping up the people, and the people like sheep following along, and then dehumanizing. We see what happens, and you can kind of contrast that. Don't we have a similar thing going on here with some politicians?
Yeah. Do I see a similar thing happening there in Myanmar?
In Myanmar, or even just in the world in general, what happens, the dangerous thing when you start dehumanizing people. So they're less human,
sure.
And it's just like, okay, so their blood is not as valuable as the next man's blood.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing that everywhere. You've seen that, I mean, 9/11 became a pivotal moment in the way the West was portrayed, the Arab world and or Islam. I mean, Hollywood is always... Hollywood portrayals of Muslims and Arabs has always been negative. You know, Muslims or Arabs in movies are always portrayed as suicide bombers or ruthless oil sheiks, or some sort of a slave rapist. But, you know, we've seen, I mean, all genocides start with words. The genocide that took place in Bosnia started with, you know, several years of demonizing Muslims as the other and as a threat to Serbian values and Serbian culture and Serbian way of life. And, you know, that's what's happening everywhere in the West. I mean, and that's what's happening in Myanmar. These Buddhist extremists portray Rohingya Muslims as a threat to Myanmar civilization, as a threat to their values. And when you do that, you portray Islam, for example, as a threat to your values, what you're saying is, Muslims are an object to be securitized. We need to securitize these people because they're a danger. That's how security policies, it's from that logic that security policies are formulated and implemented. And so, that means, you know, increased surveillance, that means profiling, that means entrapment, that means, you know, the whole community is being responsible, you know, a collective responsibility, which is a war crime. So, you know, we're seeing that in Myanmar, we're seeing that elsewhere. I mean, it's dangerous times. And I wrote a piece for Middle East Eye in my column shortly after Trump was elected. And the piece was basically what happens in the United States given fit the, you know, the 16 years of demonization and otherization and dehumanization of Muslims in the United States, and you have somebody who's been rewarded with that type of rhetoric, now the president, what happens the next day after, the day after the next catastrophic terrorist attack takes place in the United States and it's carried out by a Muslim? I mean, you've already set the foundations for either civilian internment camps or worse.
CJ, tell me what inspired you and motivated you to speak up for this persecuted people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, your viewers might not notice, but maybe you know my history, but you know, I lived in Indonesia for 10 years, you know, which is the world's most populous Muslim country. In 2005, I witnessed an Al Qaeda led or a Qaeda-inspired terrorist attack on Jimbaran Beach in Bali, and which killed about 16 people. So I've been, you know, enthralled in studying terrorism, and you know, I'm pursuing my master's in terrorism and counterterrorism at the moment. It's something that I've studied amateurly before I moved into academic field with it. But when I initially started trying to understand the mindset of why people would blow themselves up and take civilians with them, I blamed religion, and I actually became, in blaming religion and blaming Islam for those terrorist attacks, I myself became an anti-Muslim bigot. Thankfully, several years after that, I realized I'd been wrong. The deeper I started to study Islam, the deeper I started to study terrorism, realized that thesis was crudely wrong and evidently wrong. And, you know, and since I've been trying to bring the world's attention to what really does motivate and inspire these terrorist attacks, and it's it's injustices, it's humiliation. For instance, you now have the Salvation Army, Myanmar Salvation Army, or the Arakan, there in Myanmar, ASRA as they're known. I mean, they're a small militia group who have been accused of carrying out terrorist attacks there in Myanmar in response or in self-defense of the Rohingya. But they haven't carried out a single terrorist attack. They're there purely to self-defend the Rohingya Muslim. But, you know, we in the West, once they kill maybe a couple of Burmese military officials, you'll see narratives in the West saying they've been radicalized by jihadist ideology, Islam has radicalized these people, when really they've just been on the receiving end of violence themselves, and they're defending their communities.
So you're familiar now, you're really intensively studying, you know, advocating for the study, academic research on terrorism. Robert Pape and you at the University of Chicago and others, they've done studies funded by the Pentagon that people aren't, how come they don't have on CNN people like him, people like yourself, who are bringing to light these facts? You know, most of the people, they're trying to make it seem like Islam is the root of this terrorism. But when intellectuals like yourselves, academics, when you look at the facts, that's totally the antithesis of the truth.
Yeah, it's tragic. I mean, you know, if you watch Fox News or CNN in the aftermath of any terrorist attack which has been inspired or carried out by ISIS, and you'll have the usual party or Congo line of Islamophobes, shameless opportunists like Majid Nawaz, who will posit that it's not blowback from Western foreign policy, it's not, you know, a perverted ideology, it's not, you know, social structures and social injustices that are at the root of this. Instead, we talk about radicalization and we talk about radical Islam. And the minute you speak about radicalization itself, that word was, you know, term was purposely injected into public discourse by the Bush administration, because the Bush administration was in no mood to talk about the root causes or the reasons why Al Qaeda and Bin Laden carried out the 9/11 attacks. They did not want to have a discussion about why our military bases were in the Holy Land. They didn't want to have a discussion about how we, you know, handle the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in an uneven manner. They didn't want to talk about why we, you know, arm and support some of the most despotic, oppressive regimes in the Middle East and elsewhere. Instead, they wanted to shift blame away from anything that might make them culpable and shift it entirely to, another people's culture.
What can the average person do? They tune in and they're hearing this, you know. The heart gravitates towards wanting to do something good for their fellow man, and they see like, okay, you know, this could be my family tomorrow. How can I help out? What can I do now? They're listening. What I'm powerless. Like, what? Give me some advice. What can I do to make a difference, a positive difference?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends where you are. I mean, if you're in a Western democratic country like here in the United States, then you know, make noise. Noise attracts the media. The media is always attracted to bright, shiny things. And, you know, there's nothing more bright and shiny for the media when there's a lot of public noise and stirring. And that's really, you know, the noise that's been created on social media about what's happening in Myanmar is the reason you're now seeing, you know, the crisis in Myanmar make its way onto CNN. And if it makes its way onto CNN, then policymakers are going to start paying attention because their constituents are paying attention. So, I mean, you know, even grassroots things, you know, sign petitions, online petitions, call and email your congressman or your senator. Let them know that, you know, it's intolerable that the United States is sitting on their hands doing nothing while, you know, a whole people are being exterminated. I mean, these things do create action. But if we just, you know, maintain our silent outrage, then, you know, no action will follow from that.
I really commend you again. As I've said, you know, your voice has been strong on this, and I hope many will go ahead and follow in your footsteps to help create awareness in this and see the truth, which is kind of distorted and out there, but you bringing light to it really is going to help a lot of people. We're trying to do our part, and I really commend you. Thank you so much for finding the time to speak with us here on The Dean Show. I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our viewers do also. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
And there you have it. Thank you for tuning in, doing our small part to create some awareness. Now, everybody, if everybody does their small part, send a tweet, a share, do something to get this information out. And that's how we can make a change. We can make a difference. Instead of tweeting something that is of no benefit, this actually has some benefit to make, as our guest CJ Wheelerman was saying, make some noise. Make some noise so people can hear the voice of the persecuted who are out there suffering mass murder. They're being tortured, women raped. You can close your eyes, but you heard this. So you heard it. Now you can go ahead and do your small part. Bring the humanness out. And this is what really amazes me about people like CJ Wheelerman, who were on one side, on the hate side, on the hate train, and their hearts are becoming alive. And now you see people like this who were once propagating on the hate machine, anti-Muslim, anti-Islam, and now they're speaking. He's speaking on behalf of this persecuted minority. I commend you, CJ. Make sure we hook up when you're in Chicago. I really admire you taking a stand for this persecuted minority and letting your voice be loud and clear on this and making a shift, a change for the difference, speaking the truth on these matters. Very important. You've brought some great things to light. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Now do your part. Share. Sharing is caring. Get the information out. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time here on The Dean Show. Subscribe if you haven't already. Until then, thank you. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.